Respected fellow practitioners and guests, today is a special day. Here in Brisbane, it is, as everywhere in this world, the Chinese New Year. But more importantly, today we have had a very special ceremony. We have had the ceremony of taking refuge in the Triple Jewels. And what is unusual for us as Pure Land practitioners who are primarily of the Chinese background, this ceremony was conducted both in Chinese and in English. The four people who requested the ceremony, who requested to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, are all living in Australia. One was born in Malaysia. One was born in the Philippines. Two are Australians of other descent. So we had a multicultural ceremony today. We came in from Singapore. I am from the United States. Teacher has been living in Taiwan for many years, but was born in China. So again, we have a multicultural group. The nuns who attended the ceremony as well were born in Korea, in the United States, and in Singapore. Also in Taiwan. Again, a multicultural group of nuns. We all come from very different backgrounds, and yet we have all come here today together for one purpose: to strengthen our practice of Buddhism, to affirm that we wish to practice and to help all others who wish to learn about true teachings. In our case, true teachings are primarily Buddhism. But true teachings, teachings that are the truth, go beyond religion, culture. The truth, good teachings are the same regardless of the language they are said in, regardless of the religion they arise from. Loving kindness, compassion, respect for others, wisdom, living in harmony, searching for world peace, searching for why we are here, searching for answers to our questions. These are common to all religions, all teachings, all cultures. In Buddhism, as in good teachings, what is important in our practice is not necessarily just reciting a sutra, chanting a Buddha's name, chanting a mantra, sitting in silent meditation. That is one part of our practice. But the more difficult part of our practice is to take what the Buddha has taught and use those teachings in our everyday lives. That's when it becomes very difficult. When we are in the cultivation hall, it is not that difficult to practice patience, concentration, because there are no interruptions. We are all doing the same thing. So patience is very easy. There is very little in the cultivation hall that can make us angry. Again, we're all doing the same practice. It's not until we get out into the world, in our daily lives, be it at work, with our families, friends, driving down the road, going to the supermarket, doing anything. That is when we need to practice, and that is when it is most difficult to practice. To practice goes beyond forms of concentration, forms of meditation. To practice is when we look inside of ourselves and when we are very, very honest with ourselves. We honestly try to find each of our faults, and then we try to start to correct each of those faults. And that's one of the most difficult things in our practice. Sitting quietly in a cultivation hall in such wonderful surroundings as we have here in Brisbane, where everything is very quiet. The only thing you hear occasionally the sounds of birds. Very distant sound of traffic, but very distant. The environment in this facility is very calm, very quiet. But in our everyday world, we are constantly encountering situations that give great test to our ability to practice patience and diligence, endurance, getting along well with others. These are much more difficult. But when we are with others is exactly when we need to practice. In the next few days, we will be giving talks on Liao Fan's Four Lessons. We have given those talks here before. Each time the talks are given, they are a little different for two major reasons. Each time we give the talks, we understand the teaching in them a little bit better. And we can bring that understanding to the talks. Each time you listen to those talks, you understand a little more deeply because you have been practicing. Your cultivation in this lifetime is getting stronger. I say in this lifetime because we have all practiced many, many lifetimes. If we are in this room, able to listen, able to give a Dharma talk, if you are here to either take the three refuges or to be with your friends who are taking those three refuges. We have all practiced before, or we would not all be here together. And most likely, we have practiced together before, have known each other in past lifetimes. So there are no coincidences. We are all here for a reason. Everything in our lives is destined. Decisions that we made many, many years ago were destined. Decisions that we made that led to all of us being here today were all destined. But they were not destined by another outside force, another being. Excuse me. We ourselves destined. We ourselves. This is destined. I'm not sure of the cause and effect, but it is destined. We are all destined to be here. I am destined to cough. So far, you are not destined to cough. Hopefully, that's my cough destiny for today. We destined it. Nobody else did. We determined by our past thoughts, our words, our deeds, what this life would be. But just as we destined what our lives will be, we alone can change that destiny. We can decide, we can make a conscious decision. We can say that from today on, we will do everything we can to think only of others. We will stop thinking of ourselves. We will stop thinking of self-benefit. We will stop thinking of, if I do this, what will I gain? What is in it for me? We will sincerely, spontaneously do everything we can to help others. We will not have to think, should I help this person? Should I not help this person? We will see that what they are doing is good. And we will automatically do whatever we can to help them. This is practicing Buddhism. If we do this, if as we try to correct our faults, we also try to only think, how can I help others? What are they trying to do? We can give of our physical labor. We can give of our wealth. We can give money. We can give possessions. All these givings are the giving of wealth. When we give these, we will gain wealth in the future. And our giving in our former lives of wealth has determined whether we will have money now, whether others will help us now as we helped others in the past. The second kind of giving is the giving of teaching. What we are good at and others wish to know, we teach. We teach without holding anything back. If we hold something back, and this is very often done in the workplace, if we hold something back, we are not truly teaching others. Often what happens at work is our supervisor will ask us to teach a new person what it is we do. Now, we're not perfect beings. We do not have perfect compassion, perfect wisdom. We are not yet enlightened. We're far from enlightenment. And we only may be beginning to be awakened. So we are still ordinary people. As ordinary people, our natural reaction is when somebody asks us to teach what we know, everything we do in our job, to another person, our immediate thought is, if I teach this person, they will know everything I do. They may replace me. Or, in my group, I am the only one who knows how to fix this particular food. If I teach this to others, then I may not be as well appreciated in my group because others will be able to fix this dish. And maybe they'll do better than I will. So I'll hold out one little ingredient. It'll taste good, but not as good as mine will. At work, we say, I will teach almost everything, but I will withhold some information about how to do things very quickly, and I will remain indispensable to my employer, and I will not be fired. If we teach others without holding anything back, if we do everything we can to share our knowledge with them as long as they wish to learn, then in our future lives, we will have wisdom. If we have wisdom in this lifetime, we gave wisdom, teachings in the past lifetimes. But people who are ignorant in this lifetime did not teach others everything when they could have. The result of withholding teachings is ignorance. The third teaching is that of fearlessness. The teaching of fearlessness is to remove others' fears, the insecurities of others. This can be many, many different things. It can be as important, as awe-inspiring, as one person giving up their life for another. Equally important can be seeing somebody who is unhappy, who is worried. If we know them, we can just walk up and give them a hug. If we do not know them, if we just see somebody, we're in a store, we see somebody, we're at the office, somebody is upset, we simply look at them and we smile. This is to remove the fears, the insecurities of other people. If we do this, we will receive in our future lives health and long life. Those who practiced the giving of fearlessness in the past will have healthy long lives now. If we give these three forms of teaching while thinking, if I give wealth, I will gain wealth. If I give teaching, then I'll be wise. If I give fearlessness, if I calm other securities, then I'll have a healthy long life. If we think this way as we are practicing our giving, then what we get back will be small, because we will have given for selfish reasons. We will not have given purely. Our giving will be tainted with a bit of insincerity. But if we give completely without thinking of ourselves, we see somebody needs help, we help them. We see somebody wants to learn something, we teach them. We see they are worried, we comfort them. And if we do this spontaneously, we don't think about it. What they are doing is good, we help them. When we give in this fashion, we are giving as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas give. And when we give this way, we are in touch with our Buddha nature, our true nature that is within us. We all have this true nature. We all have the ability to become enlightened in the future. We all have the ability to uncover perfect compassion, perfect loving kindness, perfect wisdom. It's already within us. When we give from these perfections within us, we are not giving as I myself, as this body is giving. If you are trying to lift something heavy and I help you to lift it, it is not me who is helping you. If what you are doing is good and I spontaneously, without thinking, I automatically help you to lift what it is you are trying to, then I am in touch with my true nature. Our true nature is all the same. It is not my true nature, your true nature, your true nature. It is all one. We are not different from one another. We are all one. Throughout the universe, everything in the universe is one. Deep, very, very deep inside of us, we know this. But this knowledge is buried under lifetimes of bad habits, lifetimes of selfishness, lifetimes of greed, anger, ignorance, doubt, arrogance. These have buried very, very deeply all the good qualities that we have within us. But any moment, we can tap into them. When we are practicing our cultivation in the cultivation hall, or when we are simply quietly reciting a Buddha's name, chanting a mantra, reading a sutra, and we are focusing on what we are saying, what we are thinking, and we have no other thought, we're not thinking of what is for dinner tonight. We're not thinking of when we need to leave to drive home. We're not thinking of what we will do next week. When we are concentrating on the name of a Buddha, on the mantra, the sound of the mantra, when we are concentrating on each every single word that we are saying or silently reciting of the sutra, and when we are focused on that, if that is the only thing in our minds, in our hearts, then we are practicing concentration. When we practice concentration, all of our wandering thoughts die down. And the only thought we have is the thought of Amitabha, the thought of the mantra, the thought of that sutra. When we do that, and that is the only thing that we are thinking, saying, nothing else is in our minds, we are getting in touch with that true nature inside of us. When we are in touch, even for an instant, with that true nature inside, our wisdom will surface for that moment. When we are concentrating on listening to a teaching, listening to a lecture, to a translation of a lecture, even though we have listened to that similar lecture, even the very same lecture, we could be listening to a tape. We could be reading the same book. When we are listening and we hear something and we think, ah, I understand that now, or I understand that better, that's what that means. That is because we are focusing and we are concentrating on that lecture. And because we have been concentrating, focusing in our cultivation, we are able to get in touch with our wisdom. It may be for just a second. I have used the example of going over a talk that I was going to do, and something was very difficult to understand, and I needed to understand it because teacher Master Jing Kong tells us, if you don't understand it, how can you possibly teach about it to others or talk about it in a talk? If you don't understand it, you won't be able to explain it to others. If I could not understand that phrase in that talk, then I would have to, by conscience, just not say it, because it would have been fake, false of me to say it when I did not understand it. So I was concentrating, trying to think, okay, at least if I listen very carefully to the words, let me see what happens. And I was just concentrating on the sound of the words, nothing else. And for an instant, I understood. And then in the next instant, I forgot. But I thought, okay, if I understood one time, maybe I can understand again. And this time, I'll be a little more aware and see if I can remember this time. I went back to the beginning of the sentence and I read it again, as carefully. Again, I was only concentrating on the sound of each word, each syllable. Again, I understood. And this time, I remembered. In that instant, because I was concentrating, I was more in touch with the wisdom that is inside all of us. That was what allowed me to understand. When we do things selflessly, when we do things to benefit others, we will be in touch with that true nature. After the ceremony today, we were talking, and the subject, actually there were many subjects in our conversation. One of those subjects was learning how to teach Buddhism to others and how to do so and how much we need to know. Master Ching Kong had been talking about studying the classics. The study will be done in Chinese. Our conversation was in English because all of us speak English. And if any of us speak a little Chinese, it is a little. So our conversation was in English. Our study needs to be in English. So we were talking about how we can learn to be able to help others. Part of that learning, part of what we do to help others, is just talk to them one on one. When we meet somebody and somehow Buddhism enters the conversation. My mother is particularly good at this. Within a few moments of talking to people, my mother has told them that her daughter is a Buddhist nun and has very briefly given them my life history. My mother is a one-woman teaching unit in the United States. My mother is able to do so not because she listens to my English talks on tape. They very nicely lull her to sleep. She did say that she was having difficulty listening to my tapes because she had too many wandering thoughts. So I know she listened to at least a little bit of one tape. My mother is able to tell others very briefly about Buddhism. But what she teaches is wonderful. First of all, she's smiling the whole time she's talking to people. And this is why they started talking to her in the first place. My mother walks around smiling. She's very outgoing. She tells them very briefly about Buddhism. She tells them Buddhism makes people happy. She tells them whenever she goes to the Taoist Buddhist Association, everybody calls her mom. Everybody warmly welcomes her and always has from the first time she walked in the door. People talk to her. They treat her with respect. They're very warm. They're very caring. She tells people this. She lives in a building, in an apartment complex, where many older ladies and a few older gentlemen live. And they all talk about their children as generations of parents and grandparents have spoken about children and grandchildren. And as so often happens in our world today, most of these ladies discuss how their children never come to visit them. Some of their children do not live in Dallas. Some of their children live in other countries. Many of their children live very close to them. But their children rarely visit. They may telephone occasionally. One person recently, when asked, "Do you have any family?" said, "No. Don't ask." He probably did have family, but they have probably quit calling, quit visiting. And these ladies talk about how their children rarely visit, how their children don't seem to respect their opinions. When their children visit, they don't listen to their parents. They don't treat them with respect. And my mother sits there smiling and talks about how she emails her daughters daily. My mother is 85 years old. In March, she will be 86. But she emails both my sister and myself and my two nephews. Anytime she's having problems with her email, she gets very frustrated. She's getting very good. She has learned how to fix what she does wrong. So now she's learning how to correct her mistakes on the internet. She tells them, she emails her daughters every day. Her daughters call her. She tells them that I am usually in Singapore, more often now, traveling through Malaysia and Australia as well, that I call her, that I visit her, that I come from halfway around the world, because teacher says, if your mother is ill, go home, take as long as you need to, visit your mother. And this is what I did a year ago when she had a very rare occurrence of not being well. So she is able to say, my daughter visits me from halfway around the world. This is what her teachings are all about. So she tells them not very much about Buddhism. She tells them exactly what they need to know. She tailors, without even knowing it, her teaching to suit the audience. This is what Buddha Shakyamuni did. He would look at the audience, at the people who came to listen to him. He would go into concentration. He would understand what their level of understanding was, and he would speak to them. And as he spoke, everybody would feel he was speaking exactly to them. This is a good teacher. Our teacher does the same thing. I have heard many people say, they, as well as I, can be listening and have something that we're thinking about, and we hear just what we need to hear. We hear the answer. This is a good teacher. My mother tells people, these sweet little old ladies who are very funny when they all get together, exactly what they need to know about our teachings. She tells them, we respect older people. We value their opinion. We respect and look after older people, our parents. This is a good teacher, because she tells them exactly just a little bit about our teachings, but it's the teaching that makes a difference to them. So we do not need to know a great deal about Buddhism to teach others. We need to be sincere, to really want to help others. We teach those who want to learn. But we do not teach those who do not wish to learn. It's pointless. When people are ready to learn, they will come to us. We do not go and say, "Let me tell you about my teachings." No. The way we initially teach others is by being a good example. And again, we don't need to know a great deal to be a good example. All religious teachings, all ethical teachings, teach us how to be good examples. We're caring. We're considerate of others. We're not arrogant. We're humble. We listen to others. We help others. We practice compassion and loving kindness. These are common to all belief systems. We are good examples when we practice these. And when we practice these, people will notice. Because when we practice thinking of others, when we know that to become angry is pointless, it accomplishes nothing. When we practice remaining calm, remaining serene, being quietly happy, being more overtly happy, others will notice, and they will say, "I remember 6 months ago, several months ago, you used to lose your temper a lot more than you do now." And very honestly, don't take offense, but very honestly, you used to be very irritable. You're not quite as irritable as you used to be. You seem happier. You seem better able to take change in your life and not get upset by it. Why? This is when we teach people about Buddhism. We tell them why we are happier. Because we worry less. Because we're not worried about getting many, many possessions. All we think about is, do I have a good place, a safe place to live? Small, but safe. Do I have enough to eat? Not fancy, just good, nutritious food. Do I have clothes to protect me against inclement weather? Not a lot of them. Just enough. When we are not thinking of how do I get more things, but we are living simply, we will worry less. And that will show in everything we do. We will not be attached to things. If something happens, we loan something to somebody and they do not give it back. We no longer become upset if we loan something to somebody and they break it, or we break something. It doesn't bother us like it used to. Because we realized everything is impermanent. Everything will break. Everything is in a constant state of breaking down and changing. The cup that dropped on the floor just broke more quickly. My body is breaking more slowly, but it is also suffering change. It is also impermanent. None of us is the same as we were when we walked in this room. We cannot keep anything. We take nothing with us, nothing physical with us to the next lifetime. We can take our vows to help others. And we take our cause and effect, all the results of what we have done. But we can't take any of our possessions, our friends, our family. None of these things can come with us. When we understand this, when things go wrong, we will not get as upset as we used to. When we have problems, when somebody says something to us, we will no longer get upset because we understand cause and effect. We understand if that person said something to hurt me, it is because I said something that hurt them in a past lifetime. No point in getting angry. They're just giving back to me what I gave to them. Understanding this, I can choose to not return that unpleasantness. And in that way, I can end the unpleasantness. These are all very simple teachings. But they can have profound, far-reaching impacts on our life. When we practice these, we are good examples. And this is how we teach people about Buddhism. We can talk to people very simply. Teacher has said, concentrate on books, on cause and effect. Patriarch Ingwang lived at the beginning of the last century. 13th patriarch of the Pure Land School, taught primarily three books. He advocated the teaching, the book called Liao Fan's Four Lessons. This is not a Buddhist sutra. This is simply a book about a man who changed his life. And he did so by practicing goodness. To read the book one time, it's a very simple story. After reading it 100 times, you start to realize how profound it is. And teacher says, read it 300 times. And has spoken on Liao Fan's Four Lessons several times. We do not need to talk, to teach, to lecture, to give classes on sutras. Because very honestly, we are in the Dharma ending age. We are in an age when the Dharma is declining, when the teachings of the Buddha are becoming more and more difficult for ordinary people like us to understand. When we hear a very profound, very deep, wise teaching, most of us will understand very little of it. But when we listen to very simple, basic teachings taught by a good teacher, we will begin to realize that even in a simple story like Liao Fan, there is unbelievable wisdom and very good advice. All the wisdom of the Buddhas can be found in Liao Fan's Four Lessons. So we do not have to learn profound, deep teachings to help others. But we need to learn basic teachings very well. Because when we are teaching, we are speaking on behalf of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So what we say needs to be correct. So when we start to teach others, we start by teaching very simply. And the way we do so is to take a very short teaching and practice it over and over and over again. Each time we read that talk, each time we practice it with others in the room who are practicing the same talk, each time we do that, we ourselves learn a little more, understand a little more. And that is what we bring to that teaching. When we give that talk, we have learned that talk, and we read that talk. But by the time we start giving it to others, that talk has become part of ourselves. And even though we are reading it, it is very honest, very sincere, and people fear that. And that is all we do initially. We just give those very simple talks. And as time goes on and we learn more, we teach more to people. When we are talking to others about Buddhism, we also keep it very simple. Again, my mother is the perfect example. She tells them very briefly, in just a few sentences, a few very true things about Buddhism. If they wish, if the time is right, they will find out more. If conditions are right, they will be able to find out more. So when we are helping others through trying to teach them, we set a good example by living the teachings ourselves, by being kind, thoughtful of others, respectful of all people, all things. We practice compassion, loving kindness, patience. We think of others, not ourselves. We tell them just what they need to know at that one particular moment. When we are doing this, as unskilled as we are, as little as all of us in this room now know, when we are doing this from absolute sincerity, because they wish to know, we want to help, then we ourselves will be helped. Buddhas and Bodhisattvas will come and they will help us. All we need to do is generate the vows, the wish to unselflessly help all beings. To do this sincerely. If we do this sincerely, we ourselves will receive all the help we need. Thank you.